Hi, everybody. So glad you're here. Give us a minute to get going. I know that because we're meeting on a different day today, some people that usually can make it can't make it, and some people that usually can't make it live can make it. So we're for those of you that were at Transform the Room on Wednesday, you might remember I was saying one principle for group facilitation is every circle is perfect, not meaning myth of perfection, but whoever shows up is exactly meant to be there. And so I always believe that, and especially on days where we have a little bit of a different schedule. All right. So, let me get my notes up here. We are starting a new module today. Yay! We're starting our breakthrough questioning module, and it's going to be the layout is similar to our last couple of modules. We're going to have three calls. First call is really about foundational principles of breakthrough questioning skills and energetics of breakthrough questioning skills. Second call is kind of more nitty-gritty. We're going to look at what different kinds of questions and when to use them and why to use them and in what context to use them. I mean, it's exhaustive. There's so many questions out there. We're obviously not going to look at everyone, but you know, my Virgo likes to categorize things. So I've got lots of different categories of questions and how and when to use them. And then we will do a practicum for our third call. During this module of these three calls, we have a special workshop that's happening next week. So, we're also a little bit off our regular schedule next week. This week it's because I'm leaving tomorrow for Asheville to lead my first in-person retreat in 3 years, which I'm really excited about. I'm going to lead some of the folks in one of my advanced depths groups through a shadow training. And then next week I'm out because it's a Jewish New Year. So we're going to meet on Wednesday for a special workshop. And the workshop has, I don't love the name. I think it's like Workshop for New and Tentative Practitioners. I need to think of something sexier for that workshop. But I'm pointing it out today because even if you're not a new practitioner, now it's not for everybody in the group, but it's for new practitioners, or if you're a very seasoned practitioner, but you feel tentative about using some of the new types of skills that we're using, or you feel tentative about doing more embodiment, or you feel tentative about going deeper, or whatever it is, or if you're just tentative, even if you've been doing it a long time, that is the place for you to be. We're gonna be doing both inner and outer work. We're gonna be looking at fears, just fears being a practitioner. And then we'll also, I'll give some like tips as well. It's always just a beautiful, beautiful session with a lot of sharing. We really co-create it together. So again, not for everyone. You know if you're meant to be there or not. I recommend being there live if you want to be there, if you can be. And that's next week. Gaia lives in Asheville. We should try to meet up, Gaia. Let's message about that. That would be wonderful to at least give you a hug in person. Isn't it so funny that we don't know each other in real life? It always seems like the people that are going to be at this retreat, most of them have been with me for at least 2 years now through Sacred Depths and then Advanced. And it's like we all know each other so well, but we've never met. We get to finally meet. Okay. Breakthrough.
Hey, Joanna, sorry, can I cut in?
Yeah.
That the call that you said for new practitioners, is that going to be recorded?
It's absolutely going to be recorded. So
Okay.
it'll be there for you if you're not able to be there live or if you want to go back to it, for sure.
Perfect. Thank you.
And Sarah, it is on September 28th from 11 to 2 Eastern.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay. I'm gonna ask a question and answer it, and it's a very obvious question, but I'm gonna ask it and answer it anyway. Why are questioning skills so important in order to be effective in your work? And I really, really believe that at the heart of masterful coaching, masterful co-creation of transformation is also masterful questioning. You can't have one without the other. When you are asking really good questions, the questions have the ability to do the following. Number one, to create awareness. Number two, they can allow a client to access their own intuition and inner knowing, which is trumps any of your own knowing. Good questions can promote creativity, brainstorming, problem solving. Good questions can empower clients to take responsibility for themselves. One of the most empowering things that can happen for some folks. Really good questions can create integrity and commitment. They can help a client articulate their own judgment and ideas and thoughts. They can create breakthroughs. They can activate learning. And also, really good questions can support a client to feel more connected to themselves. One guiding principle that is at the heart of, I think, any practitioner, relationship with a client, one guiding principle that I think is at the heart of any session, and also a guiding principle that I try to incorporate more into my life because I sometimes forget, is human beings are curious. Human beings are curious, and curiosity leads to learning. And curiosity leads to learning. This is so simple, but I underscore it, and obvious, but I underscore it because we can oftentimes forget to have that curiosity. And that's really, it just can drive so much and so much goodness in our client work. Now, and this is related to what I just said. I'm gonna get on my soapbox for a moment, but just for a moment. In today's coaching and transformational industries, way too many practitioners out there are consulting when what's actually required in the moment is asking questions. Not that there's anything wrong with consulting, and I do a lot of consulting in my coaching work. I have certain knowledge or expertise, whether it's about business building or leadership or group work or whatever it is. Like I have a certain expertise that my client just doesn't have yet. And that's part of why they're coming to me. That's part of the service that I'm providing. So there's nothing, and remember, consulting or facting is one way of creating awareness. So there's nothing wrong with it at all. But that being said, when we over rely on consulting, when we consistently default to sharing our own wisdom and our own expertise and our own ideas with our clients end up on opportunities, end up missing out on opportunities to answer questions that will actually create way more helpful and motivating energy, way more excitement, way better ideas than if we were to simply share our own expertise. In situations that require questions, when we default to consultings, our clients to consulting, our clients then miss out on the opportunity to answer a question that may have made the biggest difference for them. So that seems obvious enough, but so then why do so many coaches or transformational practitioners end up consulting in moments where a question could be much more effective and powerful? Well, there are a couple of reasons. Number one, if a practitioner has any kind of discomfort with the learning process or fear that the learning is going to take too long, they need to just hurry up and, produce for their client, then you're going to skip out on asking questions. If the practitioner has any need to sound smart or to impress their client, opportunities to ask a question in the right moment are going to be missed. If a practitioner has a tendency to want to take over responsibility for their client and for their client's learning, to hero the client, consulting is going to happen when it's actually a moment for asking a question. As part of that, if a practitioner isn't trusting that the client always knows best, there may be a miss for a question. And then sometimes, especially for seasoned practitioners, they can just get too comfortable with their own wisdom, which is amazing because you've acquired a lot of wisdom, but sometimes if we just get too comfortable with our own wisdom as practitioners, we might not be asking a question in a moment that it would really make more sense. So take that in for a moment, and no judgment, but just for your own awareness. Are there moments where you might be taking shortcuts and just giving clients the answers instead of providing them with the learning opportunities that questions can really provide? And if you are doing this, why? Is it one of the reasons that I mentioned, or is it maybe for another reason? And if you're not already working with clients, you can relate this to your personal relationships and conversations, or even your conversations with yourself. Are you asking yourself questions, or are you just consulting? Like, you should do this. And right? Is the curiosity there? Carmen's asking in the chat. She's saying, I'm not sure I understand what consulting means. So, what I mean by that is giving the answer versus asking the question. So any answer, whether it's, I really think that relates back to, three jobs ago when you blah blah blah. And of course, like we can also use different creating awareness methods, right? Or this is how this happens for me a lot, where people come to me for my, let's say, my group leadership or curriculum expertise. I'm not going to start by telling someone how to set up their curriculum and what the thought leadership pieces of their curriculum are. I'm going to ask a lot of questions, and then along the way, use my expertise to help them tweak and consult on that. Right, let's pause here. Anybody want to share what's coming together for you so far on what we've been looking at? What's feeling important here? Julie's saying in the chat, what you're explaining helps me to feel so much better about so many experiences I've had with various practitioners where I end up feeling like I come away from the experience questioning if I'm maybe not coachable because they haven't really helped me. Now I feel more affirmed, though, understanding that they may have been failing to trust that I know what is best and right for me. Yeah, absolutely. You put that so well, Julie. Carmen.
Thank you. Oh, I'm nowhere to be found. There
You are.
I am. I think it piggy rides to what Julie just wrote, that even though I consider myself a very curious person, I'm more of a consultant than a questioner in so many ways and at so many levels. And I think there is a big aha coming up in relationship to my delivery of those things that are coming up that are not necessarily hard truths or out of place or delivered too harshly. It's just trusting my client is in the right place to find it, just needs that holding to figure it out. And that brings so many more questions. So yay.
That's awesome. That's so great. Yeah, and you have so much experience, Carmen, and you are such a wealth of information and expertise. So it makes so much sense because there is so much that you have to share with your clients. But I love that this is coming through because now you can kind of experiment, hold back a little bit, find some questions in some choice moments. Good.
Fascinating. Thank you, Joanna.
Thank you, Natalie.
I love what Carmen just shared, because I think that's definitely one of my challenges. And when I went through coach training, it was the biggest resistance I had to it. In the not that I wanted to not ask questions, but it's like when I so my brain, the way it works, like I make connections with things people say, and I have these insights. And the hardest thing for me is when I have an insight to not share the insight. I don't care if I'm right or wrong, but I just want to share it. So I would say when I think about, I think with certain, here's what I want to put out here. With certain clients, and it's not a good thing necessarily, but with certain clients, I find myself leaning more on my insights. Because let's say, for example, I ask the client a very powerful question, and she says, I don't know. And I might probe, I don't know, Natalie. In that moment, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to share my insight. Because I think I was riding on my impatience. I want so much to get my clients to move. And so when they're in that space of they're so blocked, and I could think of other questions, but I'm like, oh, I already know what the answer is. I think I know, and I could be wrong, and I don't mind being wrong, but at least to put it out there to get their response.
I completely hear you. So, a couple things on this. What you're voicing is so normal, which is one of the reasons why I bring this up. So that's number one. Number two, every client, and even every client in every session, there's going to be a different balance here. Like there are going to be some clients that you are going to consult a little bit more. And right, so I don't want to make anyone wrong or anything wrong or judge or anything like that. Know that. And then all that being said, I heard you say like it's an impatience, right? So that's an energetic piece. That's such a beautiful energetic piece for you to go and work on now. And I would even dig a little bit deeper if you want for yourself, like what is the fear behind the impatience, or what are the beliefs that are coming up in those moments when the impatience shows up for you? What are you scared is gonna, right? And so that you can just start to bring more awareness in those moments. And then the last piece for now, and we'll get to this more in our next questioning session, but just so that you know it's coming, there are absolutely ways to bring our insights into a question. Actually, we'll look at it later today. That's not leading. So maybe we don't want to lead, but there's absolutely, like, the insights are great. We want the insights, and we want to bring the insights into the conversation. Sometimes it's through creating awareness, like reflecting a truth or whatever, but we want to get skillful also at integrating the insights into powerful open-ended questions that allow a client to find their own answer. So that's going to be my challenge for you. Good. Lori.
Hi, what you're talking about impatience, I think is really that's the word. People come to me and they're like, well, I've been doing these things and they haven't been working. What else should I do? And I feel that pressure to fix. And I think when you had talked about a couple sessions ago about recognizing that everyone is whole and complete and doesn't need fixing. And I'm like, wow. And that just when I'm in that energy, it takes all the pressure off.
I'm so
And
glad.
when I'm there, the clients know it, but then that need to fix rises up.
Yes.
And so I think needing to go much deeper into that, I think like what you're sitting with the impatience, sitting with the need to fix, I really see that.
Yeah. I'm so glad you're bringing it back to the fixing and the whole and complete. It's so, so important. And I'll just toss this for everybody, because sometimes we may feel that a client is impatient and they just want the answer. And sometimes it's always different context, but in those moments, I may say to a client, I have some thoughts for you, and we'll get to them if we need to, but I want to ask you some questions first. And so it's like, so then we're both on the same page, and I'm also reminding myself, like, I have some great thoughts that might at some point come out that are really helpful, but I'm not gonna rush to that. Good, thank you. Jana.
I was just writing down that last little statement. That was super helpful. And everything people have said before has been really helpful. And I just, I mean, I'm trying to find that balance between consultant and coaching, particularly when I'm coaching someone around like health kind of things. Because, like you said, sometimes there's a lot of information that I have, that maybe they don't have. But I'm really like every time I'm coaching, trying to find like, okay, where can I be silent? I'm really great when I'm doing like more of a life coaching thing. Like I feel like that part, but when it comes to the health coaching, where can I be silent? Where can I ask more questions, to kind of get to where the client is? And then, okay, here's some ideas around that.
I'm glad you're bringing this up. And I do find with health coaching, sometimes that can be, although it can come up with marketing and other things. So here's one thing to consider. Consult question. So for example, I'm just going to make this up, and this may not be relevant at all because I am not a health coach, but something like, getting more vegetables in, whatever you're talking about, maybe getting more vegetables in, right? Like, so, research has shown that getting some more vegetables in can really help with that. Now, I know that it's not always easy to do that. What are some ideas that you have, client, around how you could bring more vegetables in? And is that something that you even feel like you want to do?
Yeah.
Right. So if you, not as a rule, sometimes you just consult, but if you know that you're having to do more of that, maybe think about for each thing that you consult on, how can you then ask a question that empowers the client around the fact that you just shared for them to find their own wisdom and way with it.
Yeah, I like that. Great, that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Andrea.
Thank you. I have a tell of mine that I thought I would share, and there's a couple ahas. When I am in coaching mode, I tend to sit back. And then when I'm getting into if I can feel myself, if I'm getting into consulting mode, I start to sort of lean in like this. And I can really, I don't know why, but I can really use that to kind of notice my own energetic in any given session. So I think it's quite funny. If someone was betting money on it, they'd be like, oh, she's about to flip into some telling.
That is me exactly too. I'm so glad you're sharing that too. And it is because the energetic of let me give you something versus let me hold the space for you.
Container energy, yeah. Bowl energy. Yeah. So that's funny. And then the ahas that came up were one, I do sense that especially I've observed this, especially when I'm the client, there are certain sessions where I'm very eager for answers and other sessions when I'm more laid back. So I can, often I will have a client say to me, could you just tell me today? I just feel like, would you please just tell me the answer? And so then it opens up okay, there's context. During COVID, I feel like there's been more maybe anxiousness about certain things. So it's more asking for answers and certain, we conspire towards certainty, I think. So, and then the other aha is very briefly, just some of my new clients in more of the emotional abuse arena, there's a lot of pain in the session and I can feel that it takes a lot of energy from me to not fix. It's palpably more tiring to me, to hold the not knowing and uncertainty, and the client is whole and has the answers and wait, just wait. So I'm calling in more consciousness for myself to have more support before and after to hold those sessions where I know there's going to be quite a bit of pain. Yeah.
Yeah. So what you're saying about the support for yourself before and after, I'm so glad that's you got that awareness.
Yeah.
And also, how can you ground yourself before and after and stay regulated throughout?
Yeah.
I think all of those. And if this is helpful, Andrea, in those moments with those clients that you notice yourself wanting to fix, try honoring everything we looked at in creating awareness, honoring what is, normalizing, and instead of just sitting back, because that's more of a nothingness sometimes if we replace with a something. So instead of fix, think, honor, normalize, acknowledge, and see if that can help as well.
Yeah, I can feel the energy of honor, especially that word will help. So fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And I do the forward back thing too. Okay. All right, let's keep on going. So I want to share some what I would call foundational principles for breakthrough questions. And the first thing That's important to say, is for better or worse, there's no formula. Anyone that's going to tell you, like, here is a formula for an incredible question, is like, they are not doing incredible questions. And that's because questioning really is an art. There's so many different client situations and scenarios and client moods and client energies and client backgrounds. And you want to be, right, always coach the what based on the who. You want to be taking that into consideration. So I can't give you an A plus B plus C formula, but what I am going to be sharing today are foundational principles that can help you always know the question, a question to craft and put together. The other thing to remember, this is obvious, but just to state the obvious, is that there's no single questioning or transformational skill that exists in a vacuum. So what I mean by that is masterful questions stem from masterful listening, stem from masterful energetics, stem from understanding how to create awareness. Not that you have to be perfect or know all the things, right? We're not going for that, but just they all fit together. So you want to be using your energetics, your listening skills, everything you understand about creating awareness as you craft your questions. All right. Don't expect any kind of particular answer or outcome. Principle number one. The moment when you ask a question, the moment that you are attached to a particular outcome, the moment you think your client is going to answer something, or the moment you think you know the answer that should be answered, is the moment where curiosity has gone out the window. Remember this, that's our guiding principle here. And it's the moment where you're going to bring judgment in. Your energetics are going to be off. And also, if you're attached to a particular answer, then it's going to totally stop you in your tracks like a deer in headlights if the client gives you an answer that you weren't expecting, if you were attached to it. Right? So you want to really have no expectation of what an answer is. Or I shouldn't say have no, I have expectations of answer. You want to be attached to what you think the answer should be. By the way, just like everything, all the different skills we learn, this applies to sales as well. When you're in an enrollment conversation with a prospect and you ask a question, don't be attached to any kind of answer or outcome. It won't be as productive of a sales call. Wendy's saying it's a lesson for your whole damn life. Tell me about it. I know. Sometimes it's just so much easier to do it in a coaching session than in real life. I shouldn't say real life than in my life. So take a moment and just note for yourself without any judgment. How often are you expecting a particular answer or attached to a particular answer when you ask a question? Or a particular coaching outcome? And of course, we have like shared desired outcomes with our clients, you know, based on what their goals and their vision are. But when you're like, the session must end in this way with the client knowing this, 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 and this, right? Carmen's. Yeah. Okay. So if we're not, when we ask questions and we're not expecting a particular answer, then what instead? Follow your intuition and your natural curiosity. Follow your intuition and your natural curiosity. Now, there's some nuances here. When I say follow your intuition and your natural curiosity, this isn't like an open-ended, like, oh, and I'm curious about that. And what about that, right? It's like just for your own curiosity. I mean, sometimes I can hear inside myself, like, oh, I really want to hear more about that story, because, you know, because I'm invested in my client and it's interesting and whatever. But that's not necessarily the way to go. We always want to think about what are this client's intentions for this session, and what are this client's intentions for our overall work together, and then apply that to our natural curiosity and intuition. So I always like to think of it this way, that a good question, and this is gonna might sound a little confusing or overwhelming at first, and I promise you, you don't have to like fully grasp it. I'm gonna share this and just kind of let it land and it will integrate. I always like to think of it as a good question is gonna be rooted in four things. A good question is gonna be rooted in four things. Number one, listening to your client and attuning to your client's needs, right? So it's always going to be rooted in your listening skills, what you're hearing your client saying, what you're hearing they need. Second thing a good question is going to be rooted in is keeping track of the bigger picture agenda, intention, etc. Number three, your own curiosity. Like if you get curious about something, again, if you're keeping track that it's related to the bigger picture agenda, if you're listening to your client, if you're curious about it, chances are that's going in the direction of a good question. And then number four, what you know from your own experience, or what you know, we're learning so much in this program about human nature, what you know about human nature. So for example, we'll be learning this in a few months, if you know that resistance is oftentimes a symptom of fear, and you're listening to a client talk about something that they've been really resistant to, that piece of your own experience or your own knowledge that you're going to be bringing along with your intuition, along with listening to your client, and then keeping track of that bigger picture. That was a mouthful. Let me pause there. What is feeling important? What are you hearing? What questions do you have on this or on don't expect any particular outcome? What is this making you think of? Heather.
For me, like when I think about the energetics, like if I'm already attached to an outcome, then I'm introducing that energy. And especially if my energy is, you know, bigger or stronger, then it may overshadow with the client's energy.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so true. It's not just the words, but it's like, what is the energy that the question is being delivered with? Am I attached to that outcome? Is it showing, even if it's a question that is open-ended, and but where is the energy there? Good. Julie's saying in the chat, I'm thinking of an example of a dialogue I was engaged in today where I fully noticed massive assumptions being made. In hindsight, we're going to talk about assumptions. Yep. I'm wishing I had leaned upon curiosity and questioning to invite the other parties to explore why they were so certain about their beliefs and judgments. That's right. Yeah, that's a great example. Carmen.
I'm a little on the edge on asking this because it feels like at the root of my work, everything that I'm listening is making me feel very edgy and uncertain on how I can apply it to my work. And my whole brain wants to just dismiss it and keep doing what I'm doing because it doesn't work for me. So, ta-da! The resistance has shown up. But for example, I'm sure the answer is there, and I'm sure the answer is coming up too. It just feels like when working with the body, the curiosity and my intuition will give me a picture that my client is far, far, far away from. And I don't know that I can understand how to use inquiry for them to see the picture.
Yeah.
And can that makes me feel very insecure. Yes. New client has lower back issues. I started working with her, and the first thing that comes up is that there is a belief from her childhood that is making her believe that she's not strong enough. Therefore, she's bracing so much, preventing all pain from happening, not realizing that's causing more damage than good.
And when you say it comes up, you feel it intuitively, like you're seeing it because you're working
yes.
with the body. Yeah.
And so instead of going through questions, for example, what's coming up for me right now is like asking about her childhood, how was the relationship with her mom or something like that, which I have done before, but I decided not to this time. I just said there is a belief that was very grounded on your childhood. I have the feeling that come from your mother, and I don't know if you can connect with it. It has something to do with your strength. Mm-hmm. And a lot of information came up for her, but she definitely leaned back. She leaned away. And a week later, she canceled our work together. I feel like it was too much information for her.
Yeah.
So it's like in one end, I'm like, well, this is the work that I do. This is how I work. But at the same time, I understand my work is not for everyone. Yeah. Yet I do understand that there is a big piece for growth here where everyone, even the ones that love the ice bucket thrown at them, will benefit from.
Agree. No, I always say even like sometimes people that go through sacred depths are intuitives or psychics, you know, where people are coming that to them to tell them this, or tarot readers, this, and this, still incorporate questions. So absolutely. And for you, right, like it might look, again, the balance might look different than for someone else. But let's even just take that example that you just gave. So you can, one way you can think about it is pairing a piece of consulting with a question. So this may not be it exactly like you, right, but I'm just making some things up based on what you were sharing. Oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes when there's pain in the lower back, it can be associated with not feeling like you can trust others. Where in your life do you first remember not trusting others? So how does that land for you, and what are you seeing in that, or ways that you can maybe tweak? Which, by the way, I just did a bit of consulting and then followed it up with a question for everyone.
Right. Right. No, it feels amazing. It feels amazing, and it feels at the same time very demanding of me.
Yeah.
Which I'm okay with. Yeah. Like, that's why I'm here for. But there is a big fear that arises from that demand, because if I do things differently, then the risk of fucking up is bigger. And then, okay, I just need to be okay with it. So, yeah. Yay.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. So let's not do all or nothing, and let's not go from 0 to 100. My invitation to you, Carmen, is for the next week, each of your sessions, bring this in once. Bring this in once and track and see how it goes. And then the other piece is after the session. And this is true for everyone. This is a great way to practice strengthening your questioning skills. After the session, just review the session for yourself and find one or two or three places where you could have asked a question, and take a moment to think about what question you would have wanted to ask and just write it down. That will help build your muscle.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. Okay, next principle around questions. Another obvious one, but it's always the obvious things that we need to pay more attention to. Remember that your client always has a choice. Remember that your client always has a choice. Even when we know this as practitioners, sometimes our clients don't know this, and then we can get carried away with their limited thinking. So let me give you an example. Let's say you have a client that is sharing about their situation, and they say, you know, my kids are just complete messes. They are so messy. It doesn't matter what I do, they just won't ever clean up after themselves. The client in this situation may be coming from a place of not thinking that they have a choice in the situation. And they may not have a choice when it comes to their client, their kids cleaning up, like, right, we can't make kids do that necessarily. But what does this client have a choice about? And how can you use your questioning to open up those choices for your client? How can this client feel differently about the situation? How can she respond versus react to the situation? What questions can you ask here that come from a philosophy of choice? So, when a client brings something like that up and they're feeling like they don't have a choice, sometimes what might happen for a practitioner is they want to go into consulting mode. Well, you can set up a prize chart and the kid gets a star every time they clean up, or they get a blood, right? Like what are, you know, like all the things. Those might be great solutions that can come into play, but don't go into fixing or consulting mode. Never go into fixing, but even don't go into consulting mode right away, even if you've got the best trick in the world. Number two, in a situation like that, don't be attached to your client finding a solution to the kids cleaning up, like to that she's going to figure out how they're going to clean up. There may be a way, but that way might not reflect this client's values or how she wants to parent or her energy. So we want to approach with a philosophy of choice. And sometimes the best first question to ask that opens up this idea of choice is very similar to what we ask at the beginning of a session. What would you like to receive around this issue? What is it that you would like to receive, right? She might just want to be seen in her frustration. Like, that might be exactly what she wants and needs. Or maybe she wants to know that it's normal for kids not to clean up. Or maybe she does want a solution to this. Or maybe she wants to know a way to handle it so that she doesn't resent her kids. Like, that whether they clean up or not, she's not in a place of anger or bitterness or resentment. So even just asking this question of what is it that you'd like to receive can start to yield not only more choice, but a breakthrough or a revelation around the topic at hand. Other questions that are part of this like choice philosophy that can open things up are, for example, so what's the growth opportunity for you here? What's your opportunity to grow in this situation with your kids? Where do you have a choice in this situation? That might be another great question there. Where do you have a choice in this situation? Here's another one. Is it true 100% of the time that no matter what you do, your kids won't clean up? Right? And that can lead, obviously, to other questions. We can only ask questions with a philosophy of choice if we also at least a little bit practice it in our own lives. I am not so good at remembering that I have a choice. I have to keep on reminding myself. I come from a long line of people that felt like they didn't have choices. So let me ask you. On a scale of 1 to 10, how good are you remembering in any given situation that you have a choice? I need to work this much. I can't work any less. Like, I need to work this much in order to create what I want. I need to visit my parents. That's been a big one for me. I moved away from my parents and my mom is very sick. And this, like, until I called myself out on it, I just thought like I had to go back every 6 weeks without fail. Wherever you are on the scale, how does this philosophy of choice show up or impact your life? Julie, I'm going to get to you in a second. I'm going to ask one or two more questions and then I'll get your share. One last question. What's one specific place in your life or work right now that it would really benefit you to approach it with more of a choice philosophy? What's one place in your life or work right now where maybe you haven't been giving yourself a choice, where there is more of a choice? One detail piece to this that's an important detail, I just want to remind us all again about filters and privilege. Sometimes when we have a privilege that our client doesn't have, if we don't check our filter, we may think that there are more choices than there actually are. So choice of philosophy of choice, I think, holds true almost all the time, but we do just want to check our filters and our privilege around it too. Julie.
Thanks. I noticed that I identify a lot with you. You share fairly often about your family having a long history of, you know, maybe feeling like they don't have a choice, or just different examples of the ways that your family has experienced oppression. And I'm feeling more aware lately of that pattern being present in my thinking and how I move through my life. And in regard to the question about, I feel like the last two questions tie into what I'm trying to say, thinking about where I remember that I do have a choice. Just as I'm in this place of like really trying to figure out, well, figure out what I'm doing, like I shared in the practicum in August, right now it's feeling like where I need to be showing up in my business is more with prepared foods and cooking for clients. And I notice myself having a tendency to be a little bit compulsive around finding or creating opportunities and saying yes whenever I can. And where I have a choice is around recognizing when I can not push so hard, not always be trying to like figure out and create opportunities for more paid work or saying yes to everything that comes up. And that when I do that, when I'm like, you know what, actually I'm not available for this, or this doesn't feel aligned, then the result is not only my shoulders come down, I feel more relaxed and spacious and at ease, and from that place, more aligned work comes to me. Usually it's like when I remember I have the choice and I don't have to grasp from that place of scarcity, right? Everything works out.
Yes, beautifully done. Such a good awareness. I want to invite you to come back to that awareness as you move through your day and make choices. Good.
I just will add, you know, I had an experience when I was with the people I was having the conversation with earlier that I referenced. I won't get into that because that's really complicated and messy. But in the midst of that, there was someone else there who asked, like, oh, maybe you would want to do this. And it was something that is like looking ahead to next summer. And I felt myself saying, like, you know, I could do that. And then I said to the person who I was consulting about this other job, do I want to do that? Because she knows me and my capacity. And she's like, you don't want to do that. You could do that, but you don't want to do that. And so I was also glad that I was like, I would be happy to have a conversation with you about this, but I can't even think about taking anything more on or thinking about anything more until after October 2nd.
I love that. It's such a beautiful example. Like you gave yourself, it took you a second, but you gave yourself a choice. You went from not having a choice, not thinking there was a choice, and then you gave yourself a choice. Nicely done. Good. Anina.
Yes. Oh, what a topic. I've been journeying with a lot today, and I'm so happy to, yeah, that we're talking about this today. I was wondering about, for me, the very, today has been a very emotional day, a lot of emotional processes coming up, and then I was wondering about this, like, when is it kind of like finding the balance between allowing everything to be lived and experienced, all the emotions, so not to bypass anything and to say like, okay, I have a choice, and when is it really like staying too much in it so that it becomes almost like, I don't, my friend calls it like masturbating in the pain. It's like just staying, yeah, too much in the in the emotional state, but then I'm afraid to, that it would be kind of just this mind over matter or mind over the emotional body, just saying, no, I have a choice, let's be happy.
I love the question. And so in the way that you just gave the example at the end, you are actually attached to an outcome. So the choice is either to be in the emotion or to be happy. What if we even open that a bit more, right? So the choice is to what, you know, what are the different choices here? Like, I could be happy, I could meet this moment and be with it and accept whatever is coming through. I could, right? So that it's not the black or white or the one or the other, but it truly is the meeting of the moment of whatever choice wants to come forward, instead of just having the one or the binary choices. Does that land?
Yeah. And through that question, or do that, through that reflection, I notice how much resistance there is to this staying too long in the emotion, and that's why I said, this is not a happy state, because I've been sad for the half of the day. Like, somehow that it would not be a normal thing. So yeah.
So right. So there's judgment, right? So there's beliefs. And also on a practical note, sometimes the choices that you have is, okay, I'm still feeling all of this emotion, but the kids need dinner, and it's important that I make dinner for them. So I'm going to choose to not be as focused on this right now, but I will come back to it later, right? So there's also, in terms of practicality with that, where can you go? Good.
Yeah.
Great question. Thank you. Okay. Here's another foundational piece. I'm going to start to move a little more quickly because there's still a bit I want to share today. In the right moment, be willing to be lovingly bold. In the right moment, be willing to be lovingly bold. This is true of not just questions, just of everything that we do when we're coaching, but it's okay for our questions to sometimes pack a punch, right? Or to be bold and direct. Now, we need a solid container that's built on trust and an equal playing field. In order to be lovingly bold, we wanna, you know, if we know that a client is already coming in, maybe a little dysregulated or particularly vulnerable or needing a certain kind of validation or soft energy from us that day, maybe that's not gonna be a moment for lovingly bold, right? So we wanna always, coach the what based on the who. But the reason why I say lovingly bold is because the bold always wants to be paired the way it will be received the best is if it's paired with the energy of love. So for example, let's say you have a client who shares that they're just working all the time, they're working, and they're just so upset that they never really make time for themselves or their family, etc. Right? There's maybe a little bit of a non-choice thing going on there too, right? So a good enough question, not a lovingly bold, but a good enough question, this is more like standard coaching, what would help you make more time for yourself and your family? Which is a great question at some point maybe to ask, right? What's something you can do so that you can have more time? A lovingly bold question, if it's the right moment, might sound like, when did you decide that your work was your top priority above everything else in your life. See the difference there? Now, after you unpack some of that, then a question like, so a strategizing question like, what would help you make more time for yourself or your family can be applied much better. Okay. Especially when we're lovingly bold, but even when we're not, just a reminder that in a good session, there might sometimes be some tension. Clients shouldn't always have an answer right away. It's good if your question sometimes stumps a client for a moment or two. You want your, not every question to be challenging, but you do want your questions to challenge your clients and to stretch them and to challenge their assumptions. Silence can be a very, very good thing. Yeah, Julie's saying in the example I gave, the first example of the question allows the client a little more wiggle room for resisting or avoiding looking at what's actually going on in the situation. 100%. 100%. All right, let's talk about language and words that we use when we craft our questions. Well, even before language, I'm going to say this. Not always, but a lot of the times, the better question is the question that is succinct. I am a very wordy person. I sometimes have to pause for a moment before I ask a question and take some of the words out of it. Sometimes we need context and to have all the other words in, but as you practice, and by the way, we're looking at questioning for this module is specifically questioning, but really the whole rest of the question, the program, every topic we look at, we're going to be looking at questioning skills within it. So it's not just like 3 weeks and then we're done with this. Because I really want you to build your questioning muscles, right? So one of the things is, how can I use fewer words in my questions? Watch for if you're stacking questions. Sometimes I catch myself doing this. I ask two questions in a row. Sometimes it's fine, you know, and it works. But often, more often than not, one question at a time. Okay, language. We want to both use our client's language as well as bring new concepts and terminology and language in for new awareness. So in terms of using a client's language, and this goes for asking questions, it goes for creating awareness, etc. I think we may have spoken about this a little bit in creating awareness. When a client hears their language being mirrored, they feel heard and seen and cared for, and the client is interested and present with them. So if a client consistently refers to the person they're married to as their partner, use that language. Don't use husband or wife or significant other, whatever it is. So sometimes we want to use the client's terminology, but we don't want to just parrot it without thinking, right? We want to use it when it feels important. That being said, we want to bring in new language as well. And a great way to, so, okay, when we change language, we can help change our clients' filters. When we change some language, we can help change some filters. A great way to bring in new language while also honoring a client's language is to use, in your questions or in your mirroring, use concepts that they're already aware of, that you know are important to them. So for example, if you know that your client does yoga and is really into yoga, you might ask a question using a metaphor of an inversion, or a metaphor of shavasana, or a metaphor of flexibility. If you know that your client has birthed a child and that birthing experience is like something that was really meaningful and impacted them, when you ask a question, you might use a birth metaphor. If you know that a client is really connected to nature, you use that kind of language in your questioning. If you have a client that's come from corporate or works in corporate, they're talking about their family, you might use team metaphors in your questions. One of my also personal practices that just makes things more fun and meaningful and interesting for me is I'm always looking for ways of expanding my own vocabulary and concepts that I know, and then bringing that to client questions and conversations. So I'm kind of always looking, and I like to ask myself sometimes, what is a concept that would be really helpful for my client right now? And then weave that into a question. So for example, once I was working with a client and she was just talking about the worst case scenario. She wasn't naming that she was talking about the worst case scenario for everything, but she was just really in her worst case scenario. And so I used the concept of catastrophic thinking, and I asked a question like, how is catastrophic thinking making its way into what you're talking about right now? Using concepts like metamorphosis, just anything like that, or metaphors, can also make questions more powerful. Think about your word choices. Sometimes the difference of one word can have a question land differently. So I'll give you some examples. What would feel empowering for you? Right, a client is sharing about a situation. What next step would feel empowering for you versus what next step would feel pleasurable for you? Now, some of this is based on what you know your client wants, what their needs are, what their values are. If you know that a client values having spaciousness, what would feel spacious for you here, right? So just one little word, or think about the difference between these next two questions. How do you know who your friends are versus how do you know who your trusted friends are? One question isn't better than the other. It's just one, we want to think about what are the words that we're using. Here's another example. What can you do to move forward? Great question. Versus what will you do to move forward? It's always about the who, right? Always coach the what based on the who. If you're working with a client and you know, you can sense that they are ready and raring to take action, you're going to ask, what will you do to move forward? That's going to be so much more powerful than what can you do to move forward. If you're working with a client and they're ready, but they kind of need a little more softness, there's maybe a little more tentativeness still, what will you do to move forward can maybe block them. What can you do to move forward is going to help open up possibility for them. Does that make sense? All right, I'm moving fast here, but let me pause Anything that wants to be shared or asked about language? What's coming up for you, or are you seeing around language? Wendy.
It was just one of those last things that you said, like what next step would feel blank for you, and using what you know one of their top values is to fill in that blank. That is brilliant. Like all of a sudden I'm thinking of like 12 different times I could have used that in a session that would have made it a little bit more powerful, or make it land a little bit stronger, make them think about it in a way that really just brings it home for them. So I love that question. I love that.
Good. I'm so glad. And I think in our next module, we'll talk more about client values. And I mean, sometimes they come out just through the unfolding of working together, but I do in the beginning like to ask some questions to get a sense, not just of what this person's goals are, but like, what are their values? What are their priorities? What is so important to them? Because that's going to be another guiding light in the actions that we co-create together for them and the strategies. Good.
I agree. Values work is one of my favorites. So.
Yeah. Okay. Natalie.
I just wanted to add something in there that I find myself using more and more because it resonates with me. And I think it just to the point of making it land better. So sometimes in a session, we'll create a character or a version of a client and name it, right? So let's say Lisa 1.0 and we'd have, but you're aspiring to be Lisa 2.0. We might give her a name like Shelly or whatever, right? And I'll ask the question, what would Shelly do? She's not Shelly, yeah, but she knows what Shelly means. And it's always like the best when that fits.
Yes, I love it. I love it. Yeah, that's like a variation on that, using that client's language and what is important to them. And through that filter, that's great. That's great. Okay. When you're asking a question, think about your tone of voice and also your pacing. How fast or slow are you asking the question? Your volume. And this is true not just for asking questions, but everything you do, right? Sometimes something slower can make more of an impact. Sometimes something faster. Are there certain moments where you're going to get softer? Are there certain moments when you're going to get louder? It's not just the words, but it's all of that. And as part of pacing, I also just want to remind everyone, I want to give you permission, because sometimes we don't give ourselves permission as practitioners. You can, as the coach and the practitioner, you are allowed to take a moment to pause, to formulate your question or what you want to say. Do not feel like you always have to just barrel into saying the next thing, or that you can't have a moment to craft the question. And sometimes I'll just pause if I need a pause, and then I'll ask. And sometimes I'll say to the client, hold on, give me a moment here. I'm thinking of the right word that I want to use in this next question. Please give yourself permission to do that. Anina.
Yeah, just wanted to say regarding this, that I often take a lot of pauses because I feel like, okay, what is true and what is like what really wants to come through me or from the place of intuition. And then in our coaching buddy sessions as well, it has allowed the kind of the other to kind of complete the sentence themselves. And I was just thinking that it would be also very beautiful to also have that intention for myself, also to kind of like, okay, I could also just start the question and then ask, like, can you finish that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that. And a couple pieces I want to say about that. Sometimes I will say to a client, I think I have a question, but I have a feeling you have a better question. What question do you want to ask yourself here? Right? So we never have to have all the answers. And then just the thing about the pausing, one other thing I'll just say, and I think we've spoken about this already, but it's good to keep on remembering. Part of this is about co-regulation and not having your coaching container reflect some chaotic rhythm that isn't working for the client outside of the container. Slowing down, I mean, sometimes there's a moment to speed up for sure, but slowing down isn't just about slowing down in the session. It's about modeling a way of being and then co-regulating in that way of being, which I think all of us who live in the modern world can use more of. All right. A couple more pieces for today. I think some of you, you've heard, I was mentioning this in a past class. I'll just mention it again. As a general rule, there are exceptions to this rule. There's exceptions to every rule, by the way, and tons of paradoxes in all of this. But as a general rule, ask open-ended questions. Yes or no, or multiple choice questions. Just watch for when you're doing that. Open-ended questions, sometimes, not always, but sometimes, many times, first of all, are less leading because we don't really want to lead. And number two, they'll allow more for all the things I said in the beginning, connecting with intuition and what's right for them and brainstorming, all of that. What I notice for practitioners is that we end up asking a lot more yes no questions than we think we're asking, and we want to be conscious of that. There are moments where yes or no questions are exactly what's needed in that moment. One of the biggies is when a client is in a moment, they're just on the cusp of making an internal decision. They're just on the cusp of like an empower, and then it can be so empowering, right? Are you ready to make a video for Instagram? Would you like to have that conversation with your mother? So that's one of the biggest places. I caught myself in a little bit of a yes, no leading question today with a client. And I was thinking about, could I have made that more open-ended or not? And I'm still not sure, but I'm going to share it with all of you because I think it's instructive. This client, she's just a rock star coach, and she works in corporate, and she works with leaders and managers, and we were talking today about how she was bringing up the topic that she shies away sometimes from CEOs versus like senior management she does well with, but sometimes with CEOs she feels a little small, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And as she was describing, I had this little hunch, knowing her and her patterns and all the things, I had this little hunch that it wasn't just around any CEO, but it was around men, like male CEOs. And so I asked a yes or no question, but I asked it in the way that I would create awareness. I said, you know, this is just something that's coming through. This may not be relevant or it may not land, but I want to ask you, is it just with men, right? So that's it. That was a yes or no. And it got us to where we needed to go. As it turned out, it was yes and. Yes, it was just with men and other people that exhibit a certain kind of energy that she associates with masculinity, right? So not saying never ask yes or no questions, but we just want to kind of be aware when we do. Okay, we still have some other foundational principles to get to, but I don't want to rush them in the next 5 minutes. So I think we'll pick them up in our next questioning session. For now, I want to hear from you. What are you taking away from our time together today? And first, everyone just write down at least one thing. Like, what's really rising to the surface for you? What's feeling important as a practitioner or for you personally? What's something you want to practice with? Or what questions do you have for me? I'd love to hear a couple of voice-to-voice shares. What are you taking? What's coming together? What do you want to practice on? What questions do you have? Fanshan.
Quick and easy. More questions, more questions, more questions. That's what I'm taking away.
Yeah. Good. Good. Who else? What are you taking away? What are you going to do? Or what questions do you have? I'd love to hear another voice. There's some great things in the chat too. But who wants to share voice to voice? What are you taking?
I'll share. I wrote it in the chat, but that philosophy of choice is big for me, especially with the women that I work with who are incarcerated.
Yeah. Because they're on so many levels, there aren't choices, but then where are the choices? And that can be so empowering.
Very empowering for my women.
Yeah, good, 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 good. Who else? Who else wants to share voice to voice?
I'll share real quick. I just appreciated our conversation earlier, and I just need to take some time and really feel into, okay, what is it in me that finds the need to fix?
Yeah.
Because I don't want to dump that on people, and that's not going to help them. So I need to do my own work here and figure out my need to fix, my impatience, and what's going on inside with me. So I appreciate that.
Good. I feel like there's going to be some really meaningful journaling or meditative sessions coming up.
I think so too.
Good. Anita is going to practice being patient and trust the process. Doris is saying always keep human nature in mind when asking questions. Gaia is going to work on ways to expand vocabulary and bring in concepts. Jana's going to find the opportunity to be less consultative. Yep. And bring more open-ended questions. Natalie is going to work on pacing. Good. Carmen is going to work on seducing clients' curiosity. Yes, yes. Seducing clients' curiosity nourishes the relationship in richer ways for growth and healing. And I feel like that word for you, Carmen, seducing, is going to be—it's going to be helpful for you. I love that. Jennifer's saying I need to slow down and make fewer assumptions. Yes. Concision. Melody's saying yes. Letting go of the outcome. Great. So you have homework for the next couple of weeks. If you're working with a partner, my invitation to you is to take time. Like in the session, don't rush to a question. Take a moment, really think about what's the question that I want to ask here. Think about the words, the pacing, what you're trying to get at with the question. And then in the reflection period, talk about the questions specifically that were asked and which ones worked really well and which ones could be tweaked. All right, enjoy the rest of your day and I'll talk to you all soon. Bye.